The social media app Twitter has undergone some big changes since Elon Musk completed his purchase of the company late last month. Well over half of its workforce was either laid off or resigned. Reports say some of the platform's largest advertisers have left since Musk's takeover. He's made a push to promote what he deems as free speech by reinstating accounts that had been previously banned under content moderation policies. If you don't use Twitter, you might wonder, so what? But at many points, what happens on Twitter can influence politics here in the U.S. and around the world. And it all raises questions about what exactly free speech means on any social media platform. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use Twitter? What do you think of what Elon Musk has done so far with the platform? Did you try Twitter at some point and say, it's not for me? Are you looking for an alternative at this point? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Kaye is a professor at the University of California Irvine School of Law. He's the former United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Freedom of Opinion and Expression, and he's the author of the book Speech Police, The Global Struggle to Govern the Internet. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me back.
Well, let's start with the why might people care even if they don't use Twitter? A lot of people don't use Twitter. It's smaller than the Facebooks and TikToks of the world. Why does what happens on Twitter, if at all, matter outside of Twitter?
Yeah, I mean, Twitter has had, and you're exactly right, because it's a smaller platform, much, much smaller than Facebook or YouTube or some other sites. But it has this massive kind of influence, which I think is driven largely by the people who are using the site. So it has become, over time, a major site for journalists, a major way in which governments around the world, including the United States, get their message out. It's almost like a bulletin board for public policy, for reporting, for connecting communities. And in that sense, it's got this influence that gives it an unusual kind of power. And I think in some respects, that's why people are generally, pretty upset about the changes that have been taking place there, because people are worried that kind of space for journalism, space for community, space for engagement is at some kind of risk.
I think back to 2011 here in Wisconsin, we had the Act 10 law in the state, protests at and inside the state capitol. That's when I first started to see Twitter being used by the left and the right, each in their own ways, and kind of inventing hashtags as that way to keep track of what's happening right now. People are trying to do that with protests in China, as we speak, probably. That seems like one of the most significant impacts of Twitter, with people following that breaking news, the things that are happening at this moment.
I think that's absolutely a big part of it. And it's a big part of it for a number of reasons. I mean, one is it allows for people to share what they're doing and to share what they're seeing, which, of course, as we saw, as far back as 2011, whether it was in the Arab Spring or in the context that you just described, we saw that people organized around what they saw online. So in other words, they would see something online, they would share something online, and it would have impact on the ground. In other words, people would take that and they would go to protest. They would go to the street. They would go to, their state capitol building and conduct protests. So that kind of interaction was definitely a kind of a part of the early attraction and the early influence. The problem is that at that time, in the early years of Twitter, it was also a place for, a lot of bullying and harassment. And Twitter really took a long time to figure out, can they do both things? In other words, can they be both a place for community and for organizing on the left and the right? And at the same time, can they deal with harassment and, the kind of sort of racist or anti-Semitic or Islamophobic kind of content that would push people off the platform? It was a pretty big challenge for the company for a long time.
And now here's Elon Musk, owner of Tesla and SpaceX, among other companies, now owner of Twitter. What have you seen him change when it comes to answers to that question you just raised?
Well, I mean, what Elon Musk has been doing, I think, has to be broken up into pieces because different things that he is doing is having different kinds of effects. So for one thing, like people who are, you know, ordinary users, all the way up to power users, you know, the people who tweet or retweet or like everything, one of the things that they may be seeing right now is that the platform is just slower. And in part, that's because Elon Musk has fired most of the staff who do everything from high-level policy all the way to software engineers who kind of keep the place running. So he's had this massive firing of people. He's had particularly kind of a major effort to let people go in the Twitter offices around the world. So, you know, at least as far as the actual working of the platform goes, I think people are going to start to see, if they haven't seen already, a little bit of a slowdown. But when it comes to these other things, you know, being a space for community, for protest, for sharing of information, I think we have two possibilities. I mean, one is because Elon Musk has basically said, you know, I'm going to let everybody or pretty much everybody who was kicked off the platform at some point and was kicked off even though they didn't break any law, but they broke some Twitter rules, he more or less announced an amnesty and he's going to let those people back on. You know, most of those people are unknown to the vast majority of the public, but some are pretty well known, like Donald Trump. And there will be others like that. And the risk of doing that is that by opening up to all of those people who previously were, you know, basically deplatformed because of racism or harassment or bullying or, you know, you name it, some violation of the Twitter guidelines, the Twitter rules, it's going to make it harder for people who just want to use the platform for community to use it. Because instead of finding community, they're going to find potentially, you know, what it used to be, which was a kind of, you know, it was described as a kind of cesspool of bad content, of harassment and so forth. That's the risk. And that's what really could come to pass if he follows through with this idea of opening it up to all these kinds of users who abused the platform in the past.
We're talking to University of California Irvine Law Professor David Kay about changes to Twitter, how they can affect the world outside of the social media platform. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following the story since Elon Musk bought Twitter, the changes he's making? Do you support some of the things he's done? Do you have worries? Do you have questions? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our conversation with David Kay, free speech expert, law professor at the University of California, Irvine. With us today, looking at what Elon Musk has done as owner of Twitter, what his changes could mean, even for people who don't even use the social media platform. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions. Just have a few minutes if you do want to join in. What do you see these changes doing to impact the future of Twitter, David? We've seen a lot of advertisers say, well, we're going to hold off at least. We don't want our ads popping up next to, say, some kind of anti-Semitic tirade.
That's exactly right. I mean, so there's a few different ways in which this could unfold. Like if it unfolds in the most negative ways for the platform. I mean, one is as Elon Musk opens it up to, you know, the kinds of content that I think has been troubling to many, many people in the past. One possibility is advertisers flee. And when advertisers flee, that's simply going to make it harder for Twitter to sustain itself. It has a huge amount of debt to service. It has to be, you know, it has to be kind of a going concern in order to be available to people. So that's one possibility. The other possibility that has kind of become a little bit more evident to people over the last couple of weeks is that, you know, the places where people get Twitter often is on their mobile devices. So their iPhone or their Android. And those, let's call them gatekeepers, you know, companies like Apple, that operate the App Store, they have their own rules. And if they find that the platform is being used to disseminate white supremacist content, racist content, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, anti-LGBTQ kinds of content, as that increases, those gatekeepers are going to be more and more concerned that they are hosting a site that allows that to happen, and they could clamp down. In fact, you know, even potentially making Twitter unavailable for updates and for new users to download the app. So there's all sorts of ramifications here from Elon Musk's new approach, or the approach that he's bringing to Twitter, that could over time really undermine the platform and the platform's ability to do what it's supposed to do.
We just have a minute or so left, David. What a lot of questions up in the air. What are you watching for next?
Well, one of the things that I'm interested in to see is of course what Apple and what advertisers do. But I'm also especially interested to know what foreign governments are going to do, because, you know, we're having this conversation, and not just you and me, but others within the United States, we're having this conversation about the impact on users in the US, but the vast majority of Twitter users are actually outside the United States. And it could be in a variety of ways that as the content rules change, as there are fewer people to actually determine which content should come down, which users should be deplatformed, governments are going to be increasingly concerned with that. And they are going to make demands that Twitter do certain things that would really fundamentally be against sort of norms of freedom of expression, norms of protest and right to protest, and all of that. So I would be looking especially outside the United States to see how governments actually deal with this particular set of problems that Elon Musk seems to be setting up for us.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure. Great to talk with you.
That's David Kaye, law professor from the University of California, Irvine, author of the book Speech Police, The Global Struggle to Govern the Internet. With us today to look at the impact Elon Musk has had on Twitter and how it can affect people beyond just those who use the social media platform.